Hello, everyone, and welcome to Shadow Talk, our cyber threat intelligence and InfoSec podcast brought to you by the ReliaQuest Photon Intelligence team. My name is Stefano, and I'm back hosting the pod after a short break, and Kim is here with me. So, Kim, how's it going?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you very much. Just had my coffee, so I'm ready to do this.
Ready to get cyber.
Yes. Not that we need coffee for that. It's our biggest passion ever, but here we are. So it's January, so we're still in that moment of the year where everyone is putting out blogs, webinars, podcasts, doing like a 2022 recap and talking about predictions for 2023. And we are very regional, but not as much. So we're doing the same thing. So we're going to be talking a little bit about what happened in 2022, the trends we observed in different areas, such as cybercrime, espionage, and hacktivism. And from there, we're going to be talking a little bit about 2023, what do we expect from next year, and so on and so forth. So as you can imagine, we've got a lot to talk about. So I'd say let's start right away. And the first thing I wanted to talk is cybercrime. So here at ReliaQuest, we do a lot of work with cyber criminals. We examine the main threats, the way they develop their TTPs. And so the first question for you, Kim, is what trends did we observe in 2022 that actually like shaped the way we observe this domain?
I think if we start with ransomware, then like that activity was at an all-time high throughout 2020. I think I was looking back at our quarterly reports, and from December 2021 to January 2022, ransomware activity actually decreased. But then that's probably catching up from the festive period, Russian New Year, all of that stuff. But then all throughout 2020, it's just been growing and growing and growing. The main thing across all of those quarterlies I looked at as well is that Lockbit ransomware group came out as having the most victims named to its data leak site every quarter, and by high margins as well. So they weren't just, you know, slightly tipping above the rest of the pack. They were well and truly in the lead. But then what we've also seen in 2022 is lots of smaller groups coming out and joining ransomware, because as it grown in popularity and other criminals have seen the profits that are available to be made, I think it's encouraged those smaller groups to try and get a piece of the action.
Which makes sense, because like if everyone else is making, like we're often talking about ransomware. Every company that is interested in cybersecurity, in their cybersecurity right now, are looking at the threat posed by ransomware and how this environment is developing. So it makes sense for, you know, up and coming cyber criminals to try and get in as soon as they can and as much as they can. But what you mentioned about Lockbit, I think it's very interesting, because, you know, here at ReliaQuest, we monitor more sectors, we monitor a lot of geographies. How do you explain the fact that Lockbit is consistently up there and has been consistently up there for quite a long time? Like if we're thinking about the usual cyber criminal time frame.
I think the group must have a large network of affiliates to be able to maintain such high levels of activity like consistently throughout the year as one. And then like probably just being so indiscriminate in targeting, because I think we have both seen from all the different sector quarterlies that we've done, Lockbit comes out on top in all of the different sectors as well. So it's just volume of attacks, I think, and it must be having the vast network of people to do it. And I think we've maybe seen two new versions of Lockbit in the last 12 months.
Yeah.
So you can see the group are investing in developing their tools to make sure that they can keep that level of activity going.
I also wonder if they sort of learned from the mistakes made by previous notorious ransomware groups, because as you mentioned, they surely must have like a pretty large affiliate program in order to maintain that sort of level of activity. But they also seem to have some sort of control in the victims they target, because yes, they are indiscriminating and they target a lot of sectors and geographies, but we haven't seen them making the mistakes such as targeting, I don't know, the US critical national infrastructure or hospitals, or like high profile hospitals, in the same way we've seen in the past, because that were mainly the causes why some other groups, big groups, have fallen in the past. So I wonder if they learn from other people's mistakes, because they seem to be pretty unstoppable at the moment, even though I'm pretty sure that it's not going to keep going like this forever, because like they're going to make a mistake and at some point law enforcement will be onto them. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the because we had the arrest of the Lockbit affiliate a few months ago in Canada, didn't we? And I think that kind of demonstrated that the group do try and employ quite high levels of OPSEC, because they were ridiculing that guy for being arrested because he was transferring money to his own Bitcoin account. So I think, you know, even though ransomware is relatively unsophisticated in the technique that it is, deploying the decryptor and then extorting your victims, I think the group is seemingly quite sophisticated in the way that it applies that, the way that it makes sure to, you know, dot I's, cross T's, make sure that their operational security is as good as it can be. I have got a feeling that we'll see a few more arrests of Lockbit members or affiliates over the next year, because I just can't imagine that, given the trends that we've seen, I'm sure law enforcement are seeing the same trends, you know, that across the board Lockbit is causing the most damage to organizations worldwide. So if they're not planning some sort of coordinated activity to take a few of these members down, then I'd like to know why not.
I agree with that assessment. And I think like the pressure on law enforcement must be huge at the moment to stop this group in whatever way is possible, because like they're really everywhere. Like every vendor's report on ransomware, talk about them. Every report about 2022, talk about them. So there must be a huge pressure in that area. Talking about cybercrime, but not ransomware, have you seen anything else that you deem like noteworthy in 2022 that, you know, our listeners should be aware about, or that you found interesting during your work?
I think I'm probably stealing some of my ideas for later questions, but I think like the real establishment of groups that are just doing extortion, that just have websites to leak data and extort their victims without the encryption of files element, groups like Karaka, Hacking Team spring to mind. I think also we have an increased understanding of the way that initial access brokers work as well, how they work with other threat actors, how they, you know, provide network access to ransomware actors, to those data extortioners, and how they're now kind of a critical cog in the access wheel, I guess.
Yeah, I think that is really interesting. Like what happened with Karakurt, it's something that we discussed, I remember, back in 2020. And like when we were doing the pod, I remember like the idea of like just stealing the data without encrypting, just like reducing the time of attack, was one of the main developments that we were imagining at that point. And from an analyst point of view, it's good to see that our prediction was correct. From a security professional's point of view, I was hoping that would not happen. The activity levels are, of course, still very much lower when compared with other ransomware, old-style ransomware groups, but that is, yeah, an interesting trend for sure. Moving on to the second section of the sort of recap that we're doing, I wanted to talk a bit about national state actors and the sort of cyber espionage campaigns that we've observed in 2022. In terms of these groups, let's say that, yeah, we see cyber espionage campaigns going on all the time by all kinds of national state groups. But of course, when there are some events in the geopolitical landscape that shape the way politics are conducted globally, these are pretty big impact on the cybersecurity landscape. And that was something that we were expecting a lot in early 2022 when the Russia-Ukraine war started. We were talking a lot about cyber operation, malicious activity that could stem from this conflict. But yeah, so my first question here would be like, what happened in that context? And probably most importantly, what did not happen and why?
Yeah. So, I mean, unsurprisingly, we have seen some Russia-linked espionage campaigns targeting Ukraine. But I think in the what hasn't happened is that we haven't seen it at the levels we were expecting to. I think, when the war began, we were all sort of thinking those nation state advanced persistent threat groups would be integral to the war effort. But what we're seeing as time goes on is that the cyber element of modern warfare just isn't turning out what we thought it would be. And maybe that's just Russia's approach to this war because it's kind of based on nothing. And so they're doing more in the physical space. But yeah, it's really interesting. And it's really interesting to see that these groups that are known previously for being so stealthy and for going undetected in networks for a long time, are now kind of moving away from that tactic because, I mean, we're hypothesizing that it's because they need to show results to the Russian state, but we've seen a couple of examples of like smash and grab activity where they've had a network access for months and months and months, and then all of a sudden they're just going in and being really, really noisy just to try and take some information away. So it kind of makes us think that it's trying to show some sort of progress to the Russian state to feed the propaganda that the war is working and it's justified and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, it's interesting to look back and see that it hasn't panned out the way we all thought it was nearly a year ago now.
Yeah. Really sad that this has been going on for almost a year now. But yeah, I think, yeah, I remember like when we were like talking, like writing, doing pods about, yeah, the beginning of the war, even before it was started to actually take place in the same intensity that we saw you right now. And yeah, like the cybersecurity element was one that we were expecting to like quite a big impact. Because when we talk about like nation states that have a significant capability in terms of cyber operations, Russia was also figuring out at the top of the charts, so like close with other states like China. Yeah, I think Russia and China would be the top two in this case. But yeah, that didn't have the impact that we expected, possibly for the best. But yeah, of course, they prioritized what was happening on the ground and, yeah, some cyber espionage campaign. But actually, and we will be talking about this later, most of the cyber activity that we've seen in that context was related to hacktivism, which was the big surprise, I'd say. But yeah, we'll talk about that later. What about other significant events in 2022 that impacted the cyber espionage or nation state-sponsored cyber activities?
Well, like you said at the beginning, like this nation state activity is very much tied to geopolitical events, and obviously 2022 had quite a lot of those. So we had obviously the China-Taiwan conflict changing, not for the better, with Nancy Pelosi visiting Taiwan. Do you remember when it was? September?
I would say September, but yeah, let me just do a quick search.
And then that really angered China, because it was kind of a Western show of support for Taiwan, and Taiwan is a country that China believes should be part of the Chinese mainland. And there's a real vast history to that relationship between the two countries. So I think there was a lot of concern that China and Taiwan were going to go down the same route as Russia, Ukraine. There were military drills off the coast of Taiwan at the time. But it kind of was a bit of a show of power while the US visit was going on, because I think actually it's died down a little. We've seen a lot of Chinese APT activity in 2022, but I wouldn't say that has increased significantly since that kind of rumbling and growing of tensions there happened. And then the other thing to know is all the protests in Iran. Yeah. There's been a bit more APT activity coming from Iran, like especially the group Muddy Water. I've seen several of their campaigns recently, and that is in direct correlation to the political position that is happening in Iran at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's a great assessment. Well, just one thing, Nancy Pelosi visit in Taiwan was on August 2nd. So almost, it was
1 month.
Yeah, we were almost there. And the second thing that I wanted to say is that when we're talking about national state threat actors, it's really important to keep in mind that they tend to be highly sophisticated. And as a result, we tend to see the results and the, you know, detection of their activity months or even years later. So the fact that right now we don't have too much evidence of Russian or Chinese or Iranian state-sponsored cyber operation does not mean that it didn't happen. It just means that it hasn't been detected or reported on yet. And I think it is really important to make this distinction, because it is, I would say, it's likely that throughout this year, the 2023, 2024, we will learn and know more about what happened around this moment, so around the Russia-Ukraine conflict or the China-Taiwan tensions and so on and so forth. So that is something that I wanted to highlight before we move to the third section of this pod. And this one is sort of 2022 recap of hacktivism. So by hacktivism, we intend the sort of activity going on in the cybersphere, ideologically motivated, not conducted by states, but more by its population or loosely aggregated groups. We had seen a lot of activism in the past years, then it stopped for a few years. And in 2022, I would say we've seen quite a big resurgence of this phenomenon. That is something that I wasn't particularly expecting, because based on the previous years, it sort of died down, didn't have too much impact. So I wasn't expecting that. But yeah, with the Russia-Ukraine war and everything else that started later, some of the events that you mentioned too, like the China-Taiwan tensions, the protests in Iran, we've seen a lot of different groups emerge and conduct significant activity against their targets. So can you please give us like sort of recap of what happened and what do you think of it?
Yeah, so like you said, that the resurgence of hacktivism was the most surprising thing to come out of the Russia-Ukraine war. And what we saw was some pro-Ukraine groups and also some pro-Russia groups as well. So kind of battling against each other. So the group that I think most listeners will have heard of, even before this year, 2022, Anonymous. I think everybody's heard of Anonymous. Yeah. So they were pretty active in the pro-Ukraine space. But then interestingly, what Ukraine did was set up the IT Army of Ukraine. So that was just a call from the government to anybody in Ukraine with technical skills to kind of join this loosely affiliated group of people in helping defend Ukraine's infrastructure against cyber attacks. So that's quite novel. I don't think I'd ever witnessed an example of a government kind of calling for hacktivist activity to help war. But it's modern warfare. They were expecting, as we were, to be like under attacks technically throughout the war. So, you know, make use of what you've got. And then in terms of pro Russia groups, I think probably the biggest group that's had the most impact and kind of changed hacktivism a bit is Killnet. There's also another group called Zaknet or Hacknet. My pronunciation is not good. But Killnet was using Telegram to organize its attacks and to gather followers and announce and like claim responsibility for things, because hacktivism is kind of all about making a statement. So conversely to APT groups that don't want to be hidden, hacktivist groups want people to know that it was them and know what the message was behind it. So that's really kind of started this kind of crowdsourcing of hacktivism. The main players in Killnet are kind of educating other people how to conduct DDoS attacks. They're coordinating those attacks on Telegram, you know, listing IP addresses of the country that they want to go after. And it's really like customers come to us and ask, you know, what's their risk from hacktivism? And it's kind of like, well, if you're based in a country that's supporting Ukraine, there's no kind of rhyme or reason to which organizations they're going after. It's just who's there and who's an easy target, basically. So yeah, and then they were kind of responding to every political change that was happening. You know, when Italy expressed support for Ukraine, they went after Italy. Same for Lithuania, Poland. I think Poland's been quite heavily targeted throughout all of this because of its proximity. You know, Sweden and Norway wanting to join NATO has attracted a lot of attention from these kind of actors. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was really interesting to see develop, like, when we're looking at it, because, yeah, the innovation of the Ukrainian state and ministry is to create that IT army was something that I had never seen before. I wasn't expecting to see either, if I can be honest, but it made sense in that moment. So it was, yeah, it was just nice to observe something like that, you know, being even thought and organized, you know. And then about Killnet, what struck me was the sort of hierarchical organization that they had inside and the visibility that we had inside of that. So the fact that it was divided into different legions, the fact that, you know, orders came from above in very much like a centralized way, which is something that I've never seen before. Like Anonymous is very loose, it's very decentralized, they've got like different operations going on all the time, not extremely high impact, but still that was the sort of activism that I had in mind before. So this year was really, really, really interesting to see, to observe. And also like we always thought about hacktivism as like coordinated and controlled by individuals, not tied to the governments or anything, but in the Ukrainian case, at least for the IT army of Ukraine, and I would suspect also with some prominent Russian activist group like Killnet, as we were mentioning before, there must have been some level of cooperation between the state of this group. So even the fact that it was the importance of this group was acknowledged by the state behind them. It is a sort of testament of their importance right now in the landscape that we observe. So you mentioned our customers asking us about these things. If a customer come to you tomorrow and ask you about like the sort of the TTPs that we've observed from these activist groups, so like how do they operate? What should they prioritize if you're defending against one of these groups? What would you tell them?
The TTPs of activist groups are really very simple. It's, you know, disruption, denial of service, conducting distributed denial of service attacks. So it's the advice really is about managing your attack surface and, you know, using kind of DDoS protection tools where possible. It's like phishing. It's so simple, but it's so effective. But then also the mitigation is quite simple as well. It's just about monitoring network traffic and you know, acting quickly if you see a spike to kind of nip it in the bud before it becomes a whole kind of catastrophic event for your organization.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the activist phenomenon is really like a sort of good use case for explaining value of threat intelligence, because like, you know, these groups are really noisy because that's what they want to do. Like they want their message to be out there for people to talk about it. But in the end, they're not as sophisticated or dangerous in a way as other financially motivated or politically motivated threat groups. As you mentioned, like defending against them, it goes down to the sort of cyber hygiene practices that we've often talked about. So nothing really out of this world. And threat intelligence, I think, can help in this case, but just showing what the motivations of these groups are, what the tactics and techniques are, and so sort of dial down a little bit the potential impact of these groups that otherwise are always like mentioning newspapers headlines and so can really frighten security teams or, you know, people that are not too much into this space. So I think it's really important to talk about this and to sort of just limit the scope of their impact. So we've talked about cyber criminals, we talk about financially motivated, politically motivated, and ideologically motivated threat groups in 2022. So let's just move on to some other more random questions that I've prepared. The first one being like, if you were to pick one or two cyber events that happened in 2022 that shaped the environment, the ecosystem that we've observed daily, what would those be?
So both of my picks are around the Russia-Ukraine war, because obviously that did dominate most of 2022 in terms of a lot of the cyber stuff we were monitoring. And I think the period of time when ransomware groups like Conti were expressing their support for the Russian state, that was quite novel and something we hadn't seen before, because, you know, the assumption before was that if you're operating in Russia, you kind of keep quiet to avoid the attention of the world's law enforcement and then also Russian law enforcement. And also, like, prior to that point, we were starting to see strides in Russian-US relations on cybercrime, and then the war kicked off and Conti did what it did, and then those bridges just got burnt very, very quickly. So that was really interesting. And then the aftermath of all of that as well, with the Conti leaks. So when we found out way more about the inner workings of that ransomware group, and then it ultimately leading to the group's demise, and then that is kind of what has catalyzed all of these small groups coming out to try and take some of that market share that's been left by Conti.
Yeah, if I can say something about that, I think that is another lesson that other ransomware groups may have learned from the Conti's mistakes, because, you know, financially motivated groups tend to be away from politics. Conti did not do that, and it was one of the most prominent ransomware groups before that, and after that, like, its fall was sort of decided. So I think if Lockbit was paying attention, Lockbit operators were paying attention to what was happening to Conti, I would bet that they're not going to express their political preferences in the future to avoid unwanted attention from everyone, from states, journalists, and yeah, everyone in the sort of space.
Yeah. And then the other thing I thought about, which is kind of related to Conti, is the TrickBot group. So they have been known for years as a financially motivated group. And then in 2022, they kind of handed over some of their tools to Conti, which kind of it suggested they were done with the criminal life. But then they just shifted tactics and started targeting Ukraine. So that was really interesting to see that perhaps, well, it's kind of confirming what we already knew, because we had the Drydex group, law enforcement made it public that there were ties between the Drydex group and the Russian GRU, I think. So this is kind of confirming that not only does the Russian state have grasp over APT groups, it also has some grasp over its cyber criminal, financially motivated groups as well. And especially in kind of times of trouble, when they needed kind of all hands on deck, it's kind of like they've done a big bear hug around all of the groups to get them working against the one particular mission. So I thought that was quite interesting as well. What about you? What did you think shaped the landscape from last year?
Let me think. I didn't think about that. Well, so let's think about it together. So we got ransomware that stayed the same. Well, it increased but didn't change too much in the sort of way they conduct their attacks. TTPs are pretty much the same that we observed in 2021. So data leak sites, double extortion, all that jazz is still there. In terms of cyber espionage, I don't think we've seen any campaign that really changed the way things are conducted. I think probably SolarWinds in 2020, like at the end of 2020, and the Cassia attack in early 2021, where it really impacted sort of the landscape. So I would pick, yeah, the sort of DDoS attack, like the resurgence of activism would be for me the sort of event or like sort of group of campaigns that really impacted the way that the ecosystem that we observe on a daily basis, because we weren't expecting that. I think most of the cyber threat intelligence professionals were not expecting those campaigns to be so numerous and so consistent. As we mentioned before, they didn't have like a huge impact in terms of destruction, but still they were present and organizations had to adjust their threat models to include activist groups. So yeah, I would go with, yeah, the KillNet against sort of IT army of Ukraine battle that we've seen throughout 2022. That would be my pick.
Nice.
Cool, thank you. Managed to escape that one.
So you're on the spot.
You did right. So now everyone knows how I think about stuff. That's the way I do it. Sticking boxes.
I'm just a question answer, Kim. Question asker.
So one last question, and then I'll let you and the audience go. I didn't want to have, like, I think there was a lot to talk about when we talked about 2022 recap. But as I mentioned at the beginning of the pod, there's no recap if you don't do a little bit of forecast about what happened in the future. So my last question is, what are you expecting from 2023 in terms of, you know, cyber intelligence, of course? If you had to do like one prediction, what would that be?
I think my predictions are going to be quite boring, to be honest. I think, like we already mentioned, I think that there's going to be some sort of disruption of Lockbit's activity this year. There surely has to be. Can't keep going unabated in the way it is. I can't envisage a massive shakeup of the ransomware landscape unless something like a big event like that happens to Lockbit, because until you take them out of the picture, there's not going to be a change in who's leading, I don't think. So yeah, I think we'll just have to watch this space and wait for the FBI to do their thing. And then also, like you've mentioned, the war in Ukraine, unfortunately, doesn't seem to be ending anytime soon. There is the anniversary coming up, you know, about 32 days or something like that. And I think Russia are going to need to try and show some sort of win for the anniversary when it comes up. So I don't know, perhaps they're saving some sort of cyber campaign for that anniversary, but likely throughout 2023, we will probably start finding out more about espionage campaigns that have been conducted in 2022. Those are mine. They're really dull. I'm really sorry. You've got a better one.
No, I don't. Mine was more a hope than anything.
That's okay. End on a hopeful note.
Yeah, well, it's not that hopeful, really. It's the last point that you mentioned. It's just that we'll be able to know more about what happened in 2022 in retrospective. So, yeah, my prediction was just that, yeah, I hope that we'll see more reports on what happened in 2022, like more detailed analysis of APT activities. Because, yeah, as I mentioned before, they tend to be reported later on after they've finished, after they've been exhausted. It's really rare that they're caught like as they're doing stuff. So I think that's going to be an interesting one from like a sort of just researcher point of view, really. In terms of forecasts, it is interesting, the Lockbit thing, really. Because, you know, Lockbit right now is sort of really at the top of the game, and all the other ransomware groups compared to them, even like sort of my mid-developer one, they just, you know, there's no second place, there's no third place, there's Lockbit and all the rest. And in a way, having that sort of blocks all the rest. What I'm afraid of is that if you take Lockbit out of the game, it's just going to explode, like everything related to ransomware, just going to explode to levels that we had never seen before. So yeah, it will be interesting to see what happened there. I don't think Lockbit, like 1 year from now, we'll be talking about Lockbit still being there, because based on what we've seen previously with cyber criminal groups, that doesn't tend to be the normalcy. But yeah, I guess we'll have to wait and see what law enforcement does about it, and if Lockbit operators will commit one big OPSEC mistake that will just define their end. But yeah, that's what I think is going to happen. And yeah, I guess we'll talk 1 year from now if we see if we were right or not. But
when we're still talking about Lockbit, I'll remind you of when you were like, there's no way we're going
to You're fully authorized to like save this clip, me saying that and playing it to me throughout the episode. That'd be fun. But yeah, that's the end of today's episode. Kim, thank you very much. As always, it's a pleasure doing this with you. So if you've heard anything that you're curious about today, don't forget to check out the content available in the attachment section below. This week, we've published on the ReliaQuest website, also our blog on ransomware in Q4 2022. So if you've reached the end of the episode, so if you've listened through all this episode with us, and you still want to know something about ransomware, first of all, I'm a bit offended because we've talked a lot about ransomware. But if you really want to do that, there's a blog. So you don't have to listen to our annoying voices anymore.
Just more for people that are visual learners.
Okay, let's put it that way. I will make a video for you next time. You guys, I don't want you to be feeling left behind. Anyway, thank you very much for listening to us. And I'll see you next week, I guess. Bye-bye.
Bye.